DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Eric Sammons, who is an author, national speaker, and director of evangelization for the Diocese of Venice in Florida. He is author of the book, Who is Jesus Christ? Unlocking the Mystery of the Gospel of Matthew. Eric is a convert to Catholicism from evangelical Protestantism, and he was received into the church in 1993. He has appeared on EWTN and is a frequent guest on Catholic radio. He also is the co-host of the Washington, D.C. radio show, Catholic Matters. His articles have appeared in OSV News Weekly, Homiletic and Pastoral Review, Catholic Online, and Catholic Exchange. With Eric Sammons, we go inside the pages of Holiness for Everyone, The Practical Spirituality of St. Jose Maria Escrivera, published by Our Sunday Visitor. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Chris.
I love this book, Holiness for Everyone. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
We should say right off the bat that this is the practical spirituality of St. Jose Maria Escrivera, but it's not necessarily to encourage you to join Opus Dei.
That's right. In fact, we had some debate, the publisher and I, we were debating whether or not to include that subtitle or not, because really the purpose of the book is to help each individual person to grow in holiness. And I, because I'm not a saint, I use a canonized saint's methods for doing that, and that's St. Jose Maria Escrivera, who, as most people know, is the founder of Opus Dei. But he specifically intended his spirituality to be for any person, and it was to be very broad-based for all Catholics to use to grow in holiness. But, of course, people who are members of Opus Dei follow that spirituality on maybe a deeper level or a more formal level, I guess you could say. I'm actually not a member of Opus Dei, so clearly I don't think it's reserved only for Opus Dei people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not unlike those of us who love the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. It doesn't necessarily mean we're Jesuits.
That's right. And you know, I love the Franciscans. I love St. Francis, love Franciscan, but I'm not a Third Order Franciscan, although that's a noble calling, and I think that's a great thing for people to do. I haven't chosen to do that. And the same thing with members of Opus Dei. It's a calling that certain people are able to do, but others, because of life situations or what have you, are not. But I will say that the spirituality that St. Jose Maria gave us is very pertinent to today's world. I mean, remember, St. Jose Maria didn't live that long ago, and he died in 1975. Here's a man who was very aware of the modern world, of the challenges of the modern world, and the challenges of being a saint in the modern world. And so I think if we look at St. Jose Maria's spirituality, we can find practical ways, and he was a very practical man, practical ways in which we can grow in holiness and be sanctified through our life in the modern world.
Here's St. Jose Maria is for really our time. He has a real practical spirituality, as you bring so beautifully forward, for us today, given the challenges in our world.
It is true, because the fact is that we, on the one hand, we all have the same call that every person has had since the time of Christ, and that's to grow in holiness, to grow in the life of Christ. However, each age has its own unique challenges, its unique ways in which it has to overcome certain problems and difficulties in this world to become holy, to become like Christ. St. Jose Maria saw that in our modern world, and I'd say probably number one on that list is that we have become, you know, in the Western world especially, we're very much, our lives revolve around our work. Whatever that work may be, it doesn't matter if you're a CEO of a company, a teacher, a stay-at-home mom, or you know, a garbage collector, it doesn't matter. But we definitely revolve our lives much more than maybe previous years around the idea of work, and gaining money and things of that nature. And the brilliance of St. Jose Maria, I think, is that he understood that, and he understood that, first of all, you know, obviously work is necessary. It's a good thing. God gave it to us before the fall. But it needs to be done in such a way that we're not consumed with work as the end, but instead it's a means in which we grow in holiness, which, in growing in holiness, really, that's the end that we all are called to.
it is very practical what he gives us, but it is work. It gives us structure throughout our day, just as your book does. Your book is fantastic as far as the way that it breaks open the different sections and then gives everybody practical helps with the read, meditate, pray, contemplate exercises that can occur at the end of those readings.
Yeah, and really, I'm a practical person, so I think that's one of the reasons why I was attracted to St. Jose Maria, because I look at it like, okay, what can I do today to try to grow closer to God? What practical things can I do? And St. Jose Maria, he was great because he had what he called a plan of life. And if you think about it, if you want to achieve anything in life, you have to have a plan. I have some teenage children right now, a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, and I've been talking to them about what they might want to do when they grow up. And whatever they mention, I always say, okay, what do we need to do now? What do we have to be thinking about to get to that point? If you want to be a writer, what do you have to do now? You have to write. If you just go around saying you want to be a writer, but you don't actually put any words on the paper, you're not going to ever be a writer. And St. Jose Maria, he applied that idea to the spiritual life. If you want to be a saint, you have to work at it. It's not something that just comes out of the blue without any desire or any plan of your own. You make a plan, say, okay, how can I cooperate with God's graces? What can I do so that I grow in holiness and that one day I might be a saint? And so I really like that because it gives me tools. It allows me to take those actions, always remembering that's with God's grace. It's not something we can achieve under our own power, but yet we can do things to open ourselves up to that grace.
In doing, one of the most important things, if not the most important, is to pray and to have an active prayer life.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, literally nothing can be done without prayer. And so what we have to do is we have to make time to pray. Now, that's one of the hardest things. You know, we often talk about we don't have time for this, we don't have time for that. But I think if we're really honest with ourselves, we have time for the things we think are important. Because we might say, you know, I don't have time for that, but we watch 2 hours of television a night. Or I don't have time for that, but we maybe play, we're a member of a soccer team and we're always doing that, or something like that. We make time for our own priorities. And so what we need to do is we need to make prayer a priority. Now, one thing about St. Jose Maria and, you know, all the great spiritual masters said this, you have to be practical in that. You can't all of a sudden decide, okay, I'm going to be a monk tomorrow and pray 8 hours a day or something. That's just not possible. You'll fail after the first few minutes of the first day. What you need to do is tell yourself, okay, how much am I praying right now? If I'm praying not at all, there's no time a day that I'm reserving for prayer, well, then I should reserve 5 minutes a day and start with that. And then you add 5 more minutes. And eventually what you'll find is, you are looking forward to those times. They're not a matter of, oh my gosh, I got to make sure I fit in my prayer today. Instead, other things start to revolve around your prayer life. I mean, Mother Teresa, somebody asked her one time, how do you find all the time to pray so much? Because she would pray 4 or 5 hours a day or something like that. And she said, how would I find the time to do everything else if I didn't pray? I mean, because she recognized she can't do anything if she doesn't base it in prayer. And that's what St. Jose Maria is saying, too, is find those times for prayer and make them a priority. Make sure that you set aside time for prayer, for rosary, for daily mass, if you can make it, for adoration on a regular basis, all those things the Catholic tradition has given us that allow us to draw closer to God.
It really helps establish order in the day. I mean, the secular world would give us an order for the day. I mean, you could, and whether you're listening to the radio or you're at your workplace or you're doing something, there's always schedules of things. But this really gives first place priority to the order of prayer.
And really, you know, we have to live orderly lives. And I know some people that's more difficult than others. There's some people, their personality is such, and I admit this is me, where you want to have a certain order of the day. You're very organized, things like that. And I recognize some people's personalities, that's more difficult. But it's not a matter of, okay, we have to all be, you know, militaristic about it. Mm-hmm. We can do it with our own knowledge of ourselves. Like, I remember I was actually talking to somebody once about this, and they were talking about how I mentioned St. Jose Maria's heroic minute, that moment you get up in the morning. And I was mentioning something like getting up at 6 in the morning, and they were just like, there's no way I could ever get up at 6 in the morning. I'm like, no, that's not the point. The point isn't what time you get up. The point is that the time you decide the night before you're going to get up, you really get up then. So if, let's say, you're a late-night person, you have a job that maybe you work late, you set your alarm for 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, when the alarm goes off at 9, what do? Do you hit the snooze? Or do you make that little mortification, and that's what St. Jose Maria called the heroic may, that starts your day by saying, I'm not going to allow the flesh, the body, to control me. Instead, I am going to let the spirit control my body. And so you get up right at 9 when the alarm goes off, or 7 or 6 or 8, whatever it is, and you offer up your day to God. That gives your whole day a new outlook, an order to it that it might not have if you just basically hit the snooze 5 times, you crawl out of bed, get your coffee, and you're not really thinking of God until it's already noon or something like mm-hmm. that. So I think those little things really add up to an important lifestyle change that allow us to grow in holiness.
A word you just brought up, I think it, and a lot of times we see it connected with Opus Dei in the silliest way, is mortifications. Yeah. It is something that even Blessed John Paul II practiced, and we don't have an understanding of it, do we? The secular world would want us to think it's some bizarre thing, but actually it goes back so far in the life of the spiritual.
Oh, my goodness. I would claim that you can't be a Christian without mortification. Now, the key is you have to understand what that word mortification means. Basically, it means dying to the flesh. You can't read the writings of St. Paul in the New Testament without seeing mortification come out. Now, in the modern world, we have this idea, you know, maybe from Dan Brown's novels of the albino monk whipping himself and things like that, a very distorted view of mortification. But really, all mortification is, it's denying your body some of its desires in order to draw closer to Christ. The monks have done this forever. Really, all Christians are called to do it. We do it in different ways. The monks, for example, would have a much different way than a stay-at-home mom. I like to think, you know, here's a mortification for maybe your typical stay-at-home mom. All of a sudden, your kid's crying at 3 in the morning, and, you know, waking up, you get up, and you take care of the baby, you joyfully say, I'm doing this for you, God, and I'm doing it out of love of my child. You get them settled down, you put them back to bed, or they have a dirty diaper in the middle of the night, whatever the case may be. That's a mortification, because what you really want to do is you really want to stay in bed. You really don't want to do it, but you do it anyway out of love for God. There's a mortification. It doesn't necessarily mean something extraordinary. And in fact, St. Jose Maria said the best mortifications are the ones that God gives us, not the ones we give ourselves. We should give ourselves little mortifications, but God gives us much greater ones. Perhaps it's being nice to our coworker who really gets on our nerves or what have you. That's a mortification. So I really do believe that we need to recover this idea of what mortification is and how it is so integral to the life of a Christian.
Any way you look at it, though, it is about going out into the world and being that Christ presence in that world. I mean, at least being that light that reflects his virtue, his love, his kindness. And that's a challenge in the secular, isn't it?
It really is, because we are constantly bombarded with an anti-Christian message, and we don't even realize it so much. I mean, I was just took a trip. I live in Florida. I took a trip recently up to Ohio, and we're driving up 75, and there's billboards about adult bookstores and things like that. And, you know, I'm in with my kids in the car, and my wife and I are just like, you can't even drive up the highway without being hit by how post-Christian, anti-Christian we've become. And so it's part of our daily life, no matter what kind of life we live. In the office, often people have coworkers who are, maybe curse a lot, maybe speak Lord's name in vain, maybe they say things against the Catholic Church, what have you, and they have to live with that every day, and they have to be able to witness to Christ in that situation. We all have it no matter what. And so we can't resist it, though, for not basically coming back to ourselves and saying, okay, I need to grow in personal holiness. That is my way in which I will combat the world. That is my way. I will change the world. In fact, if I become a saint, I will change the world. And we see that with the saints. I mean, Mother Teresa, she's just somebody, unknown woman who just decided, I'm going to take care of this poor person in front of me. And then she kept doing that, and she became one of the most influential people of the 20th century. And so I think we all need to see that. If we are saints in our own lives, we have such a humongous impact on the world around us that it, only God really knows what impact we would have.
I have to also just continually lift up how you help break this open for everybody in those sections, in the read, meditate, pray, and contemplate. Because in the prayer section, in the particular chapter we were just discussing about this, where this issue, this making the secular sacred, you say, offer up your difficulties at work for a suffering friend or a relative. Now, how about that? I mean, we hear about redemptive suffering sometimes, but I don't think we know how to practically make it work in our world today.
I think sometimes we have too lofty of an idea of some of this stuff. Really, sainthood's the nitty-gritty of life. It is your boss, perhaps he is just really hard on you and for no reason, and you're doing a fine job, but he just is the type that's getting on you. And that's a real suffering. That can really be a difficult thing for a person to endure. Well, why don't we offer that up, those difficulties to God for somebody, perhaps, you know, somebody, a friend who has fallen away from the faith or whatever the case may be. And God really uses that. I mean, if you think about it, that is Christianity. Jesus Christ, completely innocent, completely free of sin, he offers himself up for who? For all of us who are sinners. And so that's exactly what we can do. We can be like him by offering up even the littlest things, the biggest things, yes, but even the little things. It doesn't have to, maybe it's you've just been diagnosed with cancer. Those are the big things. But also can just be, you know, you're just annoyed by the coworker who sits next to you every day. Everything can be offered up to God and to be in for specific purposes. And I think that's really a way that we imitate Christ in the everyday. We don't have to look for the great things, the little things. And I think it's something St. Therese of Lisieux, the Little Flower Course, emphasized, and St. Jose Maria was a big follower of hers, that even the little things can be used to draw us closer to God and to help others draw closer to God.
Let's talk about the two very important sisters here, obedience and humility. They're key, aren't they?
Those are the big ones, because obedience, that really is the hardest. I think it's the hardest virtue for most of us to have, because all of us can be obedient to somebody when we agree with what they're telling us. The difficulty is being obedient to somebody that we're called to obedience of when they say then they want to do something we really don't want to do. So, for example, at work, I mean, obviously if a boss tells you to do something that's immoral or against the teaching of faith, obviously you are not called to be obedient to that. In fact, you're called to resist that. But if they're telling you to do something that perhaps you think is just a bad idea and really is going to hurt the company or whatever, you're still called to follow that and to do what you're being told to do. And that's very difficult to do. But what it does is it reminds us that we are not God. The only one, I mean, God, he is the only all-knowing one. He's the only one who can know the perfect thing to do in all situations. By being obedient, what we do is we die to self. We don't have to think, oh, I always know the right answer. I always know the best thing. I always know what I should be doing. Instead, we say, you know, God, I don't always know. I'm going to be obedient to the person you put over me. And, of course, that includes our bishops. Most in the faith, we have to be obedient to our bishops. Even if we don't always agree with what they are saying, or we think what they're more likely is we think the way they're doing something might not be the best way, well, God called them to be bishops, not us. And so that obedience. And, of course, you need humility in order to practice obedience. Because without humility, you're always going to think your way is the right way and that your pride is going to be the guiding light of your decisions. But those things are necessary to sainthood. You won't find a saint in history who wasn't obedient and who wasn't humble.
Also, with a great love for the Blessed Mother.
Really, the Blessed Mother, I grew up evangelical Protestant. Of course, we had no appreciation of the Blessed Mother. And even when I became Catholic, which was almost 20 years ago now, I didn't really have an appreciation of her. I intellectually accepted, yes, she is the Mother of God. Yes, we can pray to her. You know, those things that the Church teaches, I intellectually accepted. But it took a very long time until I started to realize the integral part of the Catholic faith the Blessed Mother is, and to sainthood. She desires for all of us to be saints, and she has such a powerful intercession, and she is the preeminent model of a follower of Christ. nobody followed Christ better than she did. And so if we look to her as that model of, okay, how is it that we are obedient? How is it we're humble? I mean, her fiat, when she tells God, let it be done to me according to your word, that is literally what every single person has to do at every single moment to be a saint. You're always saying, let it be done unto me according to your word. And so when we follow the Blessed Mother, we're sure to find sainthood. And that, it's hard to do, but if we do, if we follow her, we're sure to be saints.
I have to tell you, Eric, I love the fact that you, as a director of evangelization for your wonderful diocese, that you would lift up the fact that if you're going to evangelize, if you really want to do it, you have to have that to be a faithful friend, to be an authentic person first before you go out and try to give others proof texts on important parts of the Bible, which is no, there's nothing wrong with that, but evangelization has to begin our authentic selves first.
I think sometimes we think of evangelization strictly as a televangelist. You know, maybe somebody who speaks to thousands or millions of people and preaches the gospel, and you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with that. But that's not what most of us are called to when it comes to evangelization. And I would make it clear, every single baptized person is called to evangelization. It's just we're all called in different ways. Most of us are called to it in our daily lives. The people that God puts in our lives, our coworkers, our family, our friends, our neighbors, those we see on a regular basis, maybe you know the parents on our child's sports teams, whatever the case may be, that's who we're called to evangelize. And the first way we do that is if we're a faithful friend to them. If we show that we care for them, that we really do care for them, not as a project, somebody we're trying to convert, but as a human being made in the image and likeness of God, that we care for, that we love, that we want the best for them. If we do that, what happens is that makes the person more receptive to the reasons why we're doing it. That the reason we're doing it is because we love God first, and He has commanded us to love our neighbors as His images, in His likeness. And so by being a faithful friend, we do a great work of evangelization. And eventually what that does is that leads to those words that we do need to say, where we tell them, hey, you know, have you ever thought about going back to confession? I know it's been a long time. It's been a great thing in my life. How about, you know, maybe you should go back? You know, whatever the case may be, you can bring that up. You can say, hey, have you ever thought about, you know, maybe they're in a second marriage. Have you ever thought about looking into an annulment of your first marriage, and you know, maybe talk about that. Whatever it is, they're going to be much more likely to listen to you and be guided by your words if you've been a faithful friend up to that point.
With this year of the new evangelization coming forward, it really could be led by this wonderful saint, couldn't it?
Absolutely. I personally am such a big fan of St. Jose Maria. I mean, I think he should be a doctor of the church, mm-hmm. basically, because he's teaching us a way in the modern world to be saints and to go out and call others to sainthood. One of my favorite points from The Way, which is his famous book that you know a lot of people are familiar with, he says, these world crises of ours, they're a crises of saints, meaning the reason we have crises, in his time it was World War II, the Spanish Civil War, all these other things, in his mind, they're always because we don't have enough saints. If we have saints who are calling people to return to God, then we will resolve these crises which look irresolvable. If you look at church history, you see that whenever the world starts getting worse and worse, God's solution, so to speak, is to raise up saints. You know, like the 13th century, when things were getting so dark in the church, he raises up St. Francis and St. Dominic. Well, in the modern world, I would say he's raised up people like St. Teresa Littleflower, Mother Teresa, Blessed John Paul II, and St. Jose Maria as saints that can be models for us of how we can follow him in today's world.
We really do have an incredible gift in the virtues as well. I mean, that's really the arsenal to be able to express love.
We can sometimes get a little bit, too theological, too up in the clouds. But really, the human virtues are so important to a life of faith. Being patient, being kind, having forbearance, all these things that are just human virtues that we're all called to can really be ways in which we can model Christ virtues and model Him for others. Because you know, so many of us, we struggle with that. I know one of mine is patience. I always bring that one up first as a virtue that we need to practice because I know my own problems with it. But I also know that if I can model patience with my coworkers, with my wife, with my kids, I do such a better job of modeling Christ to them and therefore leading them closer to Christ. And so it's so important that we have these human virtues that people universally admire and recognize as good things. And then it might lead people to say, hey, why is it that this person is so patient? Why is it that this person doesn't gossip or what have you? And then they see the reason is because of a love of Christ. And that leads them to a thought of, hey, you know, this Christ, maybe I will give him a chance after all.
Mm, how beautiful. Eric, I just love this book. I just hope it gets in the hands of so many, especially those who are wanting to go deeper into the heart of the relationship with God. I mean, the ultimate, the divine friendship.
That's right. And really, we are all called to the same thing. We are called to be like Christ, to be saints. And God, the great thing is God wants us to be saints. It's not like we're doing this on our own. We have the best friend we could have in trying to be saints, and that's God. He's going to give us all the help we can. How we go about doing that's going to be different for each person, but by having a model like St. Jose Maria and his spirituality, it gives us those ways that we can incorporate certain practices, certain things in our daily life around our own schedule so that we can become like Christ.
Eric, just beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us. Any final thoughts?
Well, I just encourage people that as we get kind of wrapped up in the world and all the controversies of politics or in our culture and things like that, to remember the first and foremost thing we can do to combat that is to try to be a saint. And if we do that, then everything else will flow from that. So let's always remember the first thing we should try to do, let's try to be saints, and then everything else will fall into place.
Oh, beautiful. Eric, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
With Eric Sammons, we've gone inside the pages of Holiness for Everyone, the Practical Spirituality of St. Jose Maria Escriva. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to osv.com, the website for its publisher, Our Sunday Visitor, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.